You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShibles. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Drop us a text or a voicemail. We'd love to hear from you. Once again, that's 331-979-1369. Welcome back. Fresh week of Locked On Bulls in a holiday week for those celebrating Christmas. Today is Christmas Eve, so early Merry Christmas to you, Matt, to everybody out there that is listening. And don't worry, we are going to still have five shows this week. So whether you're commuting, going to parties, whatever the case may be, we will have episodes for you today, starting with today's episode. But Matt, first and foremost, how you doing? What's going on?
I'm doing pretty good, Jordan. Got to have a really fun weekend of Chicago sports. You know, with the Bulls put together a little two-game winning streak between Friday and Sunday. We got a double win between the Bulls and the Bears on Sunday. And what a fun way to enter a little bit of a holiday, a little mini holiday vacation here for Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. It feels pretty good to be a Chicago sports fan right now.
Yeah, at the moment, I think it feels pretty good. I mean, the Bears squeaked out a win yesterday, but that's all right.
It wasn't pretty, but it was a W.
Every win doesn't need to be pretty. And like you had mentioned before, the Bulls going and beating and having their longest win streak of the season. Is that crazy? We're in the middle. We're at the back end of December, and the longest winning streak is two games.
Yeah, Lou Brown would be proud.
Oh, man. So let's dive into these games and let's talk a little bit about where we left off. And our conversation with Trevor Booker, I thought, was really good. It was enlightening to hear him kind of talk about some of the leadership roles that he's endured and kind of what's going on in Chicago. And it's funny when he hears the things like a leadership committee being formed and some of the things that Jim Boylan has implemented with this team. In the first few weeks he's been head coach, you could hear it. You couldn't see his face, but you could kind of hear the surprise on his voice when he was talking about, yeah, teams don't usually practice back-to-backs, and yeah, this whole leadership committee is kind of a new thing. I've never seen or experienced that in my lifetime, but it was a great interview. If you didn't get to catch that, we had that last week on Thursday. Anything from his conversation that you took away from Matt after a few days?
Yeah, I mean, I think his comments about how players and coaches react and interact at the NBA level. And, you know, there were a lot of complaints, and you kind of touched on it with some of your comments last week as far as the national attention that the whole near mutiny storyline got, and a lot of people talking about how not just the Bulls young core, but just kind of NBA players in general these days are really soft whining about a practice after a back-to-back and that kind of thing. And, oh, our coach is too hard on us. And, you know, it was nice to hear it from an NBA player in our conversation with Trevor to say, look, it's not like players are soft. And it's not like they were wrong to have grievances with some of the things that their new head coach, Jim Boylan, was trying to install, because it's not normal as far as the day-to-day of NBA players. And through their grueling 82-game schedule, when they are expected to have days off and not watching film immediately following a loss before they're even allowed to get in the shower and go back to the hotel. These are things that Trevor Booker said, no, this is not normal. And the players have a right to speak up and say, hey, this is not normal.
Yeah, and it was good on him too. I'm glad he kind of followed that up with the national story, because the national perspective, I thought, was just totally lame and totally misguided with the whole guys just don't want to practice and there was no reason for it. And, you know, what have they earned? And, like, I can see it from that perspective. Is like, what has anybody on this Bulls team earned? None of them have won a championship. None of them have won MVP. So none of them should be talking. From that perspective, I get it. But at the same time, it's a little bit different of a scenario than just simply wanting to skip out on practice because they're playing back to backs. There was a whole backstory to that. I thought the national media did not do a good job of filling in national NBA watchers who don't follow the Bulls on a regular basis. That was just me, but it was nice to hear Trevor Booker kind of talk about that and say that, yeah, this isn't normal and NBA players aren't soft. And this is just the way the new NBA is, to preserve our bodies and to be at the peak of our performance when we're out on the floor, as opposed to in practices when things don't really count.
Bulls fans can have their own opinions as far as, and you, some of it's about the team as a whole and some of it's about individuals and, well, who are the ones who didn't want to practice? We need to, as kind of John Paxson has alluded to, like, weed out and figure out who wants to be here and who doesn't. And similar comments from Boylan as far as, are you worried about this national attention with the way you're operating right now, hurting your chances of signing players in free agency? And him saying, well, we want our free agent signings to be guys who want to come in and work hard and who want to practice after a loss like that, yada, yada. Like, Bulls fans can feel differently about that as far as what's right and what's wrong. But I think, you know, the bottom line that we needed to take away from it was the leadership committee, I don't think, is going to change anything. I think it's just the coach giving a little bit of lip service to his players, but it's still essentially saying, look, this is a dictatorship. I'm the boss. You get in line. But to at least have some kind of validation to say, look, it is a little abnormal the way that Jim Boylan is approaching things. And if there comes a point where this near mutiny that didn't happen, if the Bulls, look, we feel good now. We just have our first two-game winning streak of the season. But if things go south again at some point and players get frustrated again, we can go back to this and say, look, they're not complaining for no reason. And they're not just complaining because they're soft and because they're weak. They're complaining because this Bulls head coach is trying to do things that unwritten rules are not done at this level.
Yeah, it's very collegey. It's like, in college, you have a voice, but to the extent that, you know, you live and die by the scholarship that you were offered to stay at that school. It's a little bit different when you're a professional and your contract's guaranteed and you're playing for the organization rather than more so the coach than anything else. So that type of dynamic, I think Jim Boylan's got to figure that out at some point if he's going to stay the head coach for the Chicago Bulls for a length of time. He's got to figure out how to balance this hard-ass mentality with being able to connect with professionals and realize that this isn't college. And maybe that's going to happen over the next month or two, and we'll see if that ends up happening. But let's talk about these games real fast. I'll circle back at the end of the episode because you did mention the free agency thing, and I wanted to touch on something there that has come up in the last few days. But we'll touch on that at the back end of the episode. Let's talk about this Magic game real fast. How about Lauri Markkanen? It's crazy what a guy can do when he is a pure shooter and you give him more than six shots in a game, right, Matt? 32 points against the Magic the other night. He had an outstanding game, 12 for 20, six rebounds, three assists, 32 points, and he was the guy. And to go along with that, a poster, an absolute poster on Nikola Vucevic. So I was very impressed with Markkanen's game against the Magic the other night.
Oh, my gosh. It was awesome. I mean, starting with the dunk, you know, we were talking on Bulls Outsiders about how, I mean, I think hands down, that's the most fun and exciting moment of the season to date. Like, it's been obviously a rough season. Our listeners who listen to us regularly know that because they're the ones watching these painful games that we have to put ourselves through this season. But when Markkanen just threw that down on Vucevic, got me out of my seat, got me happy and excited to say, hell yeah, this is one of our building blocks. Love to see Markkanen being that aggressive. And it's not like he dunked on a scrub. Like, Vucevic has one of the highest defensive ratings of all the rim protectors in the league this season. So a huge moment for Markkanen there. And as you said, like, this was coming on the heels of a game on Wednesday when he only got six shots. And we were saying, how the hell does Markkanen, especially on a night when Zach LaVine is out, you know, this team is so shorthanded. Bobby Portis, who is another guy who loves to shoot the ball, is out. Like, how does Markkanen only get six shots? And like, to me, it's a nice way to overcorrect, to say, like, I would have been fine if Markkanen had jacked up 30 shots in that game on Friday night, because like, you need to make that correction. And of course, it was a big question asked of not just Markkanen, but of Jim Boylan and some of Markkanen's teammates, to say, how do we fix this? And is it more so Markkanen needing to be more aggressive demanding the ball? Or does Chris Dunn and some of the other, you know, facilitators on this team need to do a better job of finding Markkanen and getting him the ball? And I think we saw some of both of those improve on Friday when he was really looking for his shot more and his teammates were looking for him more, especially when, like, the fact that he started really, really slowly in that game, right? Like, I think he says he started 1 for 7.
Yeah, that
sounds
right. And
then, as you said, finished 12 for 20. So that was the other thing that I liked to hear from Markkanen in his post-game comments, was that after that rough start, when he started 1 for 7, during timeouts, Zach LaVine in street clothes was going up to Markkanen and saying, hey, man, keep looking for your shot. Keep looking for your shot. Keep shooting. They're going to start falling. Like, we're going to win this game tonight, and you're going to be the reason why. For Markkanen to get through and fight through that slow start and to continue to look for his shots and his opportunities to score, it was really refreshing and encouraging to see that.
Yeah, I think going back to the game even previous to this one, you know, you saw Chris Dunn taking a lot of shots, which I'm all right with Chris Dunn taking a lot of shots if he's knocking them down. And if you take the collection of games that he's played in this season, there's been more games where he's knocking it down at a high clip than there are that are bad games. In this situation, this scenario against the Magic, he was only 4 for 14, but he did rack up 8 rebounds and 7 assists and 2 steals to go along with that. So he didn't play too bad. The shots just weren't falling the same clip maybe a few games before that. I agree with you, though, and maybe that's just going to come with a little bit of confidence, and maybe Markkanen's starting to get his confidence back for the first time this season. We got to, you know, as fans, we got to remember that this is what, Markkanen's 5th game back, 6th game back. Like, it's going to take him a little bit of time to build that chemistry and also build that confidence back up. And I think this was a start. This Magic game with 32 points and then last night's game against Cleveland, I mean, you build off those two performances, you should have all the confidence in the world to take shots. So that's what I agree with you too. And I think it is a combination of marketing, just going out there and saying, you know what, let me have the ball because I can score it. And also at the same time, it's Chris Dunn, Archie Diakono, Shaq Harrison when he's in the game, keeping their eyes up and always looking for their best shooter on the floor, which is going to be Markkanen every single time. So if they can find ways to do that, it's going to open up lanes for guys like Chris Dunn, who's going to want to shoot the ball. And that's what we're seeing now. And Matt, I find it pretty curious too, and maybe this is going to continue when LaVine comes back and when Portis comes back, but Dunn is looking for his shot and looking for his shot often. And he said that at the beginning, he said that media day, he's like, I'm not going to be afraid to shoot the ball this season. Like, it has nothing to do with contract situation. It has nothing to do with this or that. I just want to get shots up because I know I can score. And he says it's not about contract, but you know, in the back of his mind, he's like, okay, I got to put up some numbers this season in order to solidify myself in pre-contract negotiation talks. And I'm seeing that more so than ever that I saw last year. He was putting up shots, but not at this high of a clip. But if him and Markkanen can figure things out and figure out how to split up those shots, I'm cool with Chris Dunn taking shots. But every single night, Markkanen should be the guy with the highest field goal attempts every single game, no doubt about it. Unless he gets in foul trouble. That should be the only reason.
I agree with you to a point about Chris Dunn, but like going back to their loss to Brooklyn earlier in the week when Markkanen only had 6 shots and Chris Dunn had 21, like Chris Dunn made 11 of those 21 and scored 24 points. But to me, there's never a reason for Dunn to shoot more than Markkanen. There's just not.
Like, I agree.
I know that you were saying Dunn was trying to make a point to look for his shot more and be aggressive this season. And to a point, I'm okay with that. But we still know that Chris Dunn, I think, as far as finding ways to fit into if Dunn and LaVine and Markkanen are going to work as your trio of players that you're building around right now. And of course, this will all change when LaVine finally comes back and we maybe get a sample size of, I don't know, 20 games if we're lucky to see those three share the floor together after barely at all last season. Like, LaVine is certainly a scorer. Markkanen, as he's proven in his last couple of games and as he proved many times last season as a rookie, is a scorer. It's not like Dunn is some great facilitator, but I want him to be not necessarily a pass-first point guard as opposed to a shoot-first point guard, but I do not want him to be a shoot-first point guard. We've seen him attack the basket at times this season, and his finishing at the rim is getting a little bit better. I don't know if there's a huge improvement there that we've seen so far, but I mean, if you're asking me would I rather see Markkanen put up a shot from anywhere on the floor or Chris Dunn take some of the long twos that we've seen him take so far, it's Markkanen every time to me.
Yeah, it's very strange that Markkanen ended up only with 6 shots in that game and then Chris Dunn with 21 and Bobby Portis had 18 off the bench. So yeah. I just remember in that game, Bobby Portis came off the bench and immediately was looking to shoot at will.
Shots. Well, and that's the Bobby Portis that we know.
Right.
You know, he was trying to, you know, get himself back into form and into game shape. And, you know, he's going to do what Bobby Portis does, and that's come off the bench and try and be a scorer off the bench. So it doesn't necessarily surprise you to see him take that many shots off the bench. But I mean, the fact that he had 3 times as many shots as Markkanen is absurd and not okay.
I don't know if it was a case of Jim Boylan making the switch or like realizing that when he went back and watched film, or if it was just the collective unit, like, hey guys, we can't get our best shooter, realize that our best shooter is on the floor and we can't just get him 6 shots. And I think he only had 1 in the second half. Pretty sure he only put up 1 shot in that second half. So
including it was a close game late against Brooklyn and they didn't look for him. Like, you know, this was another game in which you saw a costly Chris Dunn turnover late in the game. You saw poor shot clock management and poor offensive execution late. And you're saying, where the heck is Markkanen and why are they not trying to get him a look to win this game? Like, that to me is the most troublesome part. And it certainly ties into what you were just saying as far as, like, you know, some of this is got to be on the head coach, Jim Boylan, who, you know, we're watching him slow this Bulls offense down to a screeching halt as far as offensive pace because of his, you know, let's eliminate mistakes and walk before we can run and all that nonsense. Well, you know, I'm not really buying into that right now. Yeah, we've seen some increased effort on the defensive end and the Bulls are holding opponents to 100 points, which is, you know, good, nice, good for them. But as far as executing on the offensive end, Boylan has to know that, you know, it's inexcusable to underutilize Markkanen in the way he did in that game against Brooklyn.
I would agree. The other thing that I caught from this Bulls Magic game was the fact that the Bulls are finding a way to get on the glass, and it's an entire team effort. And I was enjoying that because you look across the board. You know, we talked about how Wendell Carter Jr.'s had be the guy that's basically been thrown around like a rag doll because he's had to work the glass because nobody else would. And you reinsert Markkanen into that lineup. He hasn't been known to be a great rebounder, and he's still working himself back. So you figure there'll be a little bit help there, but still it's going to have to come from the collective unit as a whole. And I'm just looking at the guys that had rebounds. This entire team had at least 3 rebounds that played minutes during this Magic game. Like, you look at the guys off the bench, like Shaq Harrison grabbed 4 rebounds. Antonio Blakeney grabbed 3 rebounds. Chris Dunn had 8. Ryan Arcidiacono had 3. Carter had 8. Holiday had 10 rebounds in this game. So if there's an improvement Jim Boylan has made that I actually can get behind, is getting every single guy that he plays out there to crash the glass. I'm like, that's what I want to see. I want to see our guys crashing the glass the way that they have been. And it seems like it's become more of a team effort than anything else. And so if there's one thing I can point out that Jim Boylan's doing well, on top of getting this team to actually play some halfway decent defense, it's the fact that they're all crashing the glass together and not just hanging Carter out to dry or hanging Markkanen out to dry to try to battle guys down on, down low. So I did like that from this Magic game, and the Bulls were finally able to close out a game this season, which has been difficult. And I get it. It's the Magic. The Magic are 14-17, just a little bit under 500. But to close out a game, I think that's good, and you need to build off of that. But I was impressed by the glass work by the Bulls as a whole during this Magic game.
Yeah, I mean, it is a noticeable improvement as far as you described it, sort of not just individuals making efforts, but the team rebounding and it being a team thing. And even, you know, your backcourt guys chipping in, as you know, 11 combined rebounds from Archie and Dunn in that Magic win, and, you know, Blakeney and Shaq Harrison chipping in 7 more for your bench backcourt. The thing that we keep harping on this season is that this Bulls team, especially with all the injuries, is so undermanned on a nightly basis as far as being outmatched talent-wise to their opponent, that the margin for error is razor thin. And it's something that Hoiberg talked about before he got fired, and he wasn't wrong about it. And giving your opponent second chance opportunities to put the ball in the bucket is something that the Bulls cannot afford to do this season. And unfortunately, through the first 30 games or so, they were guilty of doing it all the time. So even if they were, you know, able to get a stop or, you know, force a tough shot that resulted in a miss, they couldn't round out that defensive possession by getting a defensive rebound. And somebody, you know, whether it was, like Steven Adams in the games against the Thunder or any of the other guys, you know, wrecking the boards on the offensive end this season in the NBA, the Bulls were just getting terrorized on the offensive, on their defensive glass and giving up so many second chance points. And that's something that they can't do because they're, you know, they're fighting from behind pretty much all from the jump ball at the start of the game because they're that undermanned. So it's not like a sexy part of the game where you really want to hone in on improving and getting yourself better, but it is necessary for the Bulls to be a team that's better about grabbing those defensive rebounds after getting misses to complete the defensive possession, and they have done better with that in recent games.
They're not wasting possessions either. Like, you look at their turnovers in against this Magic team. The Magic only had 8 turnovers, but the Bulls only had 7. So I was impressed by that, too. You know, we talked at the beginning, the first 5 or 6 games of the Jim Boylan era, the Bulls were turning the ball over 21 times per game. So to see that kind of adjust and see guys actually taking care of the ball, that's nice. I don't know if that partially has something to do with Zach LaVine being out, who's averaging like around 5 turnovers a game. That could have part of the cause, but I like to see the improvement there, and that has happened. That happened in this Magic game. I don't know if in the Brooklyn game, I know that they didn't have something ridiculous like 20 turnovers, and that's what was able to keep them in the game. You know, that's been the biggest problem is the Bulls stay in those games, even going back to when they played for Fred Hoiberg. They were staying in games until they stacked up the turnovers coming back to back to back, and then all of a sudden you find yourself 18, 20, 22 turnovers, and you're down 15 or 20. So I like to see that adjustment, too, that the guys are actually taking care of the ball and doing what is necessary to make sure that they handle it with care. And it's showing, and it's keeping the Bulls in games. So you like to see that. Let's get to this Cleveland Cavaliers game last night, Matt. 112-92. I know if you're a Chicago fan here, you were probably flipping back and forth to the Bears game, or you were just focusing yourself on the Bears game into the conclusion of this Bulls. But it was a good game again. I thought, you know, as terrible as Cleveland is at 8-26, I think the Bulls have a far superior team than that Cleveland team does, even without Zach LaVine. And Markkanen, again, he was the highlight of again last night, who was just absolutely dominating and building off that Magic performance.
I mean, yeah, take it for what it is. It is a dominant win, the Bulls' first blowout win of the season, really, against an equally bad opponent. Like, the Bulls and the Cavs were tied for the worst record in the league coming into this game yesterday at 8-25. The Bulls managed to execute. They had their second straight 30-point game from Markkanen, which you love to see. Again, very efficient, 11 for 18, including 5 of 10 from downtown. And other than that, you know, balanced. They got 5 guys in double figures. Holiday, 15. Archie, 12. Chris Dunn, 17. 8 and 7 boards, or 8 rebounds, 7 assists. Lopez had 11 off the bench. It was a well-balanced game for the Bulls, with Markkanen leading the way. And certainly in Levine's absence, that's what you want to see. And, you know, give them some credit for once again making the hustle plays and the defensive effort plays, and forcing the Cavs into a very bad game, which, you know, it isn't hard outside of Larry Nance Jr. and, you know, maybe Jordan Clarkson, who's their bench guy right now. He chipped in 17 off the bench. This is just an awful Cavs team. And Colin Sexton, the guy that they took after the Bulls took Wendell Carter Jr., brutal. 3 of 16 last night. 3 of 16. Yuck. Like, anytime Sexton was jacking up shots yesterday, I was like, wow, all right, well, this is one way for the Bulls to win a game. People talking about, like, dude, I'd rather have Colin Sexton than Chris Dunn right now. Like, dude, yeah, I don't know about that. Chris Dunn yesterday, you know, we're talking about how involved we want him to be and how aggressive we want him to be shooting the ball. Very efficient, 8 of 11 for Dunn yesterday and 17 points. And the key, 7 assists to 1 turnover. We keep talking about that assist to turnover ratio and the Bulls minimizing their mistakes on the offensive end. And the fact that as Jim Boylan started preaching about it, and we're going to slow the offense down to eliminate mistakes, the Bulls were getting worse as far as offensive efficiency. The Bulls have the worst offensive efficiency rating in the league still right now. And we're turning the ball over 20 plus times, even though they were slowing their offense down tremendously. But in a game like yesterday's, when the Bulls certainly had enough talent on paper to go beat a very bad team, they executed, they limited those mistakes. 11 turnovers and only 1 for Chris Dunn, your starting point guard. So you like to see that. But I still did see some possessions where the Bulls were, you know, like 24-second shot clock violations against this Cavs team. Ridiculous. Like, come on. Like, that can't happen. But it's still happening.
I know. And I think somebody brought it up on Twitter, but I think the Bulls have the most 24-second shot clock violations in NBA history in one season. Like, it's gotten pretty ridiculous. I would say that there's probably been 8-10 instances where the Bulls have turned the ball over because they haven't gotten a shot up in 24 seconds. Like, that to me needs to change.
Which is like the opposite of Fred Hoiberg.
It's wild. Yeah, right? Like, Fred was like, get down the floor and get a shot up within 8 seconds. Like, now it's struggle to find a shot in 24 seconds. So that's something's got to change. But you were right. You're totally right about Chris Dunn, an efficient 8 for 11. I was going to bring up Colin Sexton, too, because, man, holy shit, was he bad last night. And, you know, Stacey King and Neil Funk kept saying, like, throughout the game, it's like, why is he dribbling so much? Why is he dribbling so much? Why is he dribbling so much? And you could see Larry Nance was getting visually frustrated with Colin Sexton. Like, dude, like, stop dribbling for 2 seconds. So at least it was nice to see that the frustration was somewhere else besides the Bulls team for once. And, to you know, the Bulls had their road, whatever it means by road dog mentality, they had it last night, beating the Cavs by 20. You had mentioned, too, Markkanen with back-to-back 30-plus point games, 31 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. The only concern I had in this game last night was the disappearance of Wendell Carter Jr. again. Like, man, there is games where we go and we don't hear or see Carter basically doing anything. And it's frustrating because, again, last night, picking up BS fouls that Carter didn't even commit. I'm pretty sure last night he picked up 2 fouls that weren't even on him. And at some point, somebody's got to look at this and say, why is Carter picking up all of these fouls? Matt, I cut up 25 different plays this season that are completely obvious that are not Carter fouls. And then there was about another 25 to 30 fouls that he's committed this season already that were because he's bailing his teammates out. So the Bulls need to find a way, and I don't know what it is, whether it's getting him involved offensively to give him a little bit more confidence, to give him some slack with the refs. I don't know what it is, but they need to get Carter involved, because every game it seems like the first quarter, Carter's picking up a foul or two fouls, and he's getting frustrated with himself. And by the time you get to halftime, Carter almost has two or three fouls every single game. And there's no way to incorporate him into the offense if he's going to be in foul trouble all the time. So it's a combination of things right now, and I think you can see it. He's visually frustrated. But Jim Boylan's got to find better opportunities to get him involved and build his confidence back up, because it looks like, just from what I'm seeing on the floor, it looks like his confidence level is a little bit low, and they need to find a way to incorporate him more.
Yeah, I think you are correct about that, and I think it is a few different factors weighing here, and certainly one of them is foul trouble, as you mentioned. Foul trouble again yesterday, and I thought some of the calls against him yesterday were really ticky-tacky.
They're bullshit.
You know, one where I think it was Nance that he was, you know, going up against trying to protect the rim, and it was just like a tiniest little bump, but Wendell went straight up. You watch the replay, he is straight up contesting the shot, and there's a tiny little bit of contact that the Cavs player initiates, but like I couldn't believe that they called a foul, and that was one of so many where Wendell has just been like, ah, you're a rookie, and there was contact, so I'm calling a foul on you. Some of them have been, you know, brain farts and mental mistakes from Wendell, and that comes with the territory of being a 19-year-old rookie being asked to do a lot defensively this season. But some of it is, I also think that Wendell is just getting awful treatment from NBA officials right now. And the other part that is probably even more so important is that, as far as Wendell Carter Jr., you know, ghosting or disappearing, as you suggest, is the transition from Fred Hoiberg to Jim Boylan, and that Wendell is not even really looking for his shots on the offensive end. Because we saw some games earlier this season where Wendell was having a little bit of a coming out party. Like, look, I can score the ball. I can score the ball. Certainly really haven't seen his outside game at all this season, but down low, whether it's offensive rebounds or doing some things in the post, he did start to show us some things. But I think he's trapped in his own head, and whatever it is Jim Boylan is trying to do, and I mean, like, for God's sakes, Jim Boylan's running his offense through Robin Lopez in the second unit, and it's just like grinded out 90-style half-court, you know, posted up every possession basketball as if the Bulls have freaking Patrick Ewing on their team. I don't understand it, because it's so backwards to what the NBA is now. And I don't agree with Jim Boylan's whole, well, we're going to slow things down to eliminate mistakes theory. I don't agree with it. The Bulls have won some games doing this because they're just grinding these games and making them slow, ugly games, because he didn't think that they had what it takes to run and gun and win. But in that Fred Hoiberg style that was not so much calling plays, but just free-flowing offense, push the pace, keep the ball moving, move without the ball, and, you know, find open looks. Wendell seemed to just be kind of reacting and going with the flow when that was the case offensively. But now it's like Jim Boylan's trying to install his quote-unquote offensive system, which is archaic. It's like watching cavemen play basketball out there. And Wendell is so afraid to screw it up that every time he gets the ball, he's usually getting the ball outside, like around the perimeter. No, it's not like he's getting looks to post up, whereas his backup Robin Lopez is getting those looks. Wendell is essentially just coming out to the perimeter to set screens and do handoffs, and he's never, ever looking to score. And that is upsetting.
I look at the numbers that Carter was posting under Hoiberg, and now looking at the transition to Boylan, and the thing that should not be happening with one of your young players is a dip in field goal attempts, especially when your highest volume shooter is out, and Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen was out even before that. Like, Carter should be getting looks, and Hoiberg was finding ways to involve Carter, and part of it was when when Carter wasn't having good offensive nights, in part that was because he was in foul trouble. If you go back and look at his log, a lot of the games that he had 5-6 fouls in, which are a lot of games, he wasn't scoring that much. But there are games where he, you know, go back and look at it. An 18 and 25 game. He had a 17 and 15 game. Like, he was putting up good numbers and getting shot attempts up. Now I look at Boylan's era since that Houston game, since the Indy game, since the first time Jim Boylan has taken over. Wendell Carter's only shot has only had two games where he's taken 10 or more shots. Two games. He scored in double digits only twice. He's had 12 points at Indy, and then he had 10 points against Orlando. Like, that is not, that's unacceptable. Like, you want Wendell Carter Jr. to start to cave in and go reverse style. Like, we don't want that. We want Carter to show us what he has on the offensive end, because that's what we didn't see from him in college. You know, we talked about that even back at the draft. Like, oh, is he getting overshadowed by Marvin Bagley? Can Carter actually play offense? Does he have an offensive style to his game? And early on, we saw that he can do that. But at some point, like, in order to develop Carter's game, he's got to get shots up in real time. He's got to get shots up during the game. And to me, Matt, this is the perfect opportunity to do that. I know we were talking about how Markkanen should get the most shots in every game, and I still agree with that. But at some point, we're almost, what, halfway through the season? You've got to start trying to find a way to get Carter involved offensively, because I don't know about you, but I think it's completely unacceptable that a night in and night out basis, Carter's only taking 5 or 6 shots. And like you said, he looks lost. He's not even looking at the basket anymore to take his own shot. Like, I don't know what Boylan is trying to do, if he's just trying to get him out there to be that defensive stopper, and that's basically all he's going to do. That might win you a few more games, but that does nothing for Carter's offensive development. And so, you know, I'm not going to bag on Boylan for that right now, but if we're looking at the same way Carter is playing right now, if we're looking at this in March and he's still taking 5-6 shots in a game, like, I'm going to have a serious problem with that. And Bulls fans should too, because I want to see Carter develop his offensive game. And that should be even more evident with Zach LaVine out. So that's just me. Like, I'll give it some time. I'm willing to sit here and be patient and give it some time. But if we're talking about Carter taking 5 or 6 shots in the month of March, I'm going to have some serious issues with that.
I mean, I understand your frustration, and I feel some of it too, but I would temper it just a little bit by saying, like, expectations for Wendell Carter Jr.'s game offensively as a 19-year-old rookie should not be that high. Like, we're putting a lot of pressure on this kid as a number 7 overall pick, and we want him to be this amazing, you know, front court tandem, you know, duo with Markkanen, who showed us a lot as a rookie offensively. But, I mean, you mentioned the fact that Wendell kind of took a backseat to Bagley in his one season at Duke. And as much as we want to believe in the high ceiling that's out there somewhere for Wendell's game on the offensive end, I think it's foolish to expect too much of that this season. And I understand the point about, like, in a lost season like this, when really all you're trying to do is see what kind of talent you have and develop these young players, you know, Wendell should get some of that attention, and you would like to see some kind of development of his game on the offensive end to make some use out of what is otherwise essentially a lost season as far as, you know, competitiveness goes. And that's fair, but I'm just saying, this kid's 19. He's only going to turn 20, like, when the season comes to an end. He is still so raw, and the Bulls are trying to figure a lot of different things out right now. And yes, you can say you wish he had more shot attempts, especially in games when they are missing a big piece of their offense, like Zach LaVine. But I'm saying the Bulls are throwing a lot at Wendell Carter Jr. right now, and the league, with this crazy foul trouble, is throwing a lot at Wendell Carter Jr. right now. And I think Bulls fans need to temper the expectations of what they want from him on the offensive end.
I agree with you there, and I can meet you halfway on that. The only thing I would say is, I would agree more so with you if Carter didn't post a 25-point game against Nikola Jokic, who arguably should be in the MVP conversation if he's not already. Like, he had 25 points against that guy earlier this season. He had 28 points against a backcourt or a front court in Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond just a few weeks ago. So maybe it comes
in games that Markkanen had not returned yet. I think that's the other key. Like now the Markkanen's back and we're sitting here saying, wow, I'm so glad that Markkanen's dropping 30 point games. What do you want? A 30 point game from Markkanen and a 25 point game from Wendell? That's not really all that likely.
Right. And I'm not saying that he needs to go out, like Carter doesn't need to go out there and score 25 a game, but get the man 10 shots. I mean, I don't think it's that hard to get the man 10 shots a game to build up some of his confidence a little bit. You know, that's where I'm stuck is like, okay, you're completely right in the fact that Carter's getting a lot thrown at him and he's a rookie and he's asking to take on a ton of responsibility for a 19-year-old. We sound like the Celtics fans talking about Jason Tatum last year. Oh, he's only 19. Like, every time I heard he's only 19, I at the end of the season I want to blow my brains out. But that's a different conversation. The Carter thing though, get the man 10 shots, please. That's all I'm asking. Get the guy 10 shots, get him some confidence, and maybe he'll build off of some of those things that he's been frustrated with. And maybe if he's actually banging bodies down low on the offensive side of the ball, maybe he'll start to get some calls from refs, right? Like if he's more than just a guy that's out there to be a defensive stopper, maybe he'll start to get some more of those calls from the refs. But I don't know. You got to get your young guy, though, the guy that you're trying to build another piece around, especially with Zach LaVine out. Try to find out what's going on with his offensive game and figure out how to incorporate him. And I'm not saying he needs to take 25 shots. Just get the man 10. That's all I'm asking. No, just get the man 10.
And that's fair because in their last four games, Wendell's shot attempts are 7, 8, 10, and 8. So you do have a fair grievance there. And the point you make about maybe if he does a little bit more offensively and proves himself on that end, he might get a little bit more love and respect from the refs. And that's actually something that I believe Stacey King said during their broadcast of yesterday's game with, you know, some of these. I think it was probably after one of those really ticky-tack fouls that Wendell got. He said, you know, if you're not proving yourself on both ends of the floor as a rookie, the refs are less inclined to give you that leniency on the defensive end if you're not putting buckets in on the offensive end. So, you know, certainly that could be one theory as far as maybe getting the refs to lighten up on Wendell a little bit. And I think it's fair to say, come on, just let me get 10 shots a game from Wendell. I think that's reasonable. But when you talk about this team being fully healthy and Markkanen, LaVine, and Dunn all getting in your starting lineup together, then are you still demanding 10 shots a game from Wendell? Because you were saying earlier, you don't mind Chris Dunn looking for his shot and shooting, you know, 15 times a game. We want Markkanen shooting 15 times a game. And then, oh, by the way, here comes Zach LaVine, and you know he's shooting 15 times a game.
Right.
So at some point, when healthy, Wendell will be the fourth guy down on the, you know, on the whose mouth needs feeding chart of getting up shots offensively. And that's not even to mention Justin Holiday, who at least for right now remains as, you know, a very important piece of that starting lineup, who also his sole purpose out there is to get up shots. So it's like Wendell really is not even fourth when the Bulls starting lineup is fully healthy. He's probably fifth.
That
so maybe
true.
10 shots is a lot.
That's a good case. And that just goes back to Boylan. Boylan's got to figure that out. That's what he's getting paid for, is figure out how to get all of these guys' shots. And that's fine. Like, when LaVine returns, Dunn, LaVine, Markkanen all getting their shots up and Holiday for however long he is here still for, that's fine. I need to see something that's going to spark Carter, obviously, besides the defensive stuff, because he's doing all of that stuff he's doing without appreciation. You know, he's the guy that's grinding it on the boards. And like, for his sake, give him some shots while LaVine is out, and then you can figure it out once LaVine comes back. But you're right. Carter's probably going to be fourth or fifth man on the totem pole once LaVine comes back. And then if he's playing minutes with Portis too, Portis is going to get his shots up too. So it's going to, there's a whole lot of guys that want to shoot and not enough balls to be playing on the court. So we'll find out.
And that's not to say that is how it will always be moving forward. I'm just saying that that's kind of the way it's working right now.
True.
It is frustrating, but that might change at some point as we move forward. And who knows if Boylan is not the coach of this team long term, there will be more possessions to have to spread the ball around and get everybody their shots because we won't be playing at -8 miles an hour.
That is very true. The last thing I got real short is I mentioned it a few weeks ago, but I do have to mention it once again. So Robin Lopez, since he had that like benching, was moved all the way to the back of the bench, didn't play for a stretch of, I think, what, like 5-7 games. Since he's been reinserted and like basically revived by Jim Boylan, he's played pretty well, man. I have to say he's been pretty decent off the bench for the Bulls. And I don't know if that's just because he's brought some of that grit that this Bulls team is looking for. But he's played pretty decently, and I'm not saying he's being a world beater, but I got to give him a little bit of credit. Coming off the bench, he's been decent in the role that he's been given so far. So, and the Bulls don't really have much of a choice, right? It's like, it's Robin Lopez or you allow Cristiano Felicio to play. So
I mentioned it earlier on, talking about Boylan's offense. Like, he's running their second unit offense through Robin Lopez in the post.
It's so strange.
Which is such a... oh my goodness, talk about yesteryear's NBA. I mean, Robin certainly has made the most of his opportunities. I still am, you know, pulling teeth out and pulling my hair out, yelling at the TV, being like, why is Robin Lopez dribbling in the post right now? And sometimes the old Wildcat does a little up and under move or uses a footwork and a little mini hook shot that works. And I say, wow, okay, Robin Lopez is a non-zero useful player in this league still, even though his style of the NBA game is so outdated. And there are some times when Robin Lopez loses the ball because he's trying to dribble in the post, and that's when I go crazy. But clearly, if there's anybody who has been the biggest benefactor of Fred Hoiberg out, Jim Boylan in, as far as how the Bulls offense operates, it's Robin Lopez, hands down.
Yeah, I would say him and... Shaq Harrison's been getting some love because he plays so much defense. You know, Shaq Harrison's been getting a lot of run and he's played pretty decently, you know, needs to find that offensive game consistently, but I like the things that he's doing defensively. So, and it seems like Boylan does too. He played 23 minutes last night and he played, I think, 21 against the Magic. So those two guys, biggest benefactors, I would agree as well. So we'll find out, though. We'll find out. The Bulls got a couple games coming up this week, so see if they can build off of that. But that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. You can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful and Merry Christmas from everybody here at Locked On Bulls from the Locked On Podcast Network. We will be back tomorrow with an episode. We're going to mash up together all of the best guests we've had from this entire year for you guys. So there will be an episode tomorrow, as well as three or more episodes this week. So there'll be fresh content all week. Hopefully you have a Merry Christmas from Matt Peck, from me here at Locked On Bulls. We thank you guys for listening so much. Without you guys, we wouldn't be able to do this. So once again, have a Merry Christmas from Locked On Bulls. I'm Jordan Malley. For Matt Peck, we are out of here.
Once in a while, one of the kids caught us is lit or dope or whatever it is, but it's all those things.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.